Okay, 1 minute to go. Okay, we have 28 registered clicker users. Hurry while stocks last. Okay, time to start. Okay, a couple of announcements first. A message from Mirella that she asked me to pass on to you. She's pointed out that just a couple of nights ago there was a BBC television programme on called Planet Word, and it was presented by Stephen Fry. Did anyone see it? Yeah, okay. So it's about language and languages of the world and general stuff like that. And Mirella asked me to recommend that you watch it, which you can still do on iPlayer for the next week or so. So she reckons it's relevant to the course, yeah? She reckons it actually covers some course material in a, as she put it, superficial but reasonably entertaining way. So I watched it last night, and yeah, it's somewhat superficial but reasonably entertaining. So quite enjoyed that. Mirella's posted a message on the discussion forum, right, which gives you a link to the iPlayer place where you can find this online. Otherwise, you can probably find it yourself. It's Planet Word episode 1, actually. So that's quite fun. Secondly, I was wondering if I could have a volunteer to help me with something for about 20 minutes immediately after this lecture. Basically, I want someone who can take me to the machine rooms upstairs, log on as themselves, and let me test some software to see if it works from the student's point of view. Would anyone be, and I promise I won't trash your, I mean, you see what I'm doing. Would that be okay? Thanks very much. If you could just come up here at the end, that'd be brilliant. So this is just in the interest of making sure that your practical all works smoothly and stuff. It all works from our end, but would like to know it works from your end too. Okay, so last time we were talking about deterministic finite automata and non-deterministic finite automata. There are a few little bugs on the slide which are spotted, which I've now corrected. So just to remind you of a couple of little things. So the idea in a non-deterministic finite automaton is for any state you're in and any transition you want to make, there may be a place to jump to, there may be more than one place to jump to. So if you're in Q0 there and you get a 1 symbol, there are 2 places you can jump to. Or if you're in Q5, there are no places you can jump to, whatever ever you get. So, okay. What happens now? It's very interesting. So what that amounts to is saying, rather than having just a transition function that takes you to your new state, we have a transition relation which gives you all possible combinations of previous state, symbol, and new state. Okay, so I've got a little red. There. But one small detail I forgot to mention, to emphasize last time, is another difference between NFAs and DFAs. Is that in accordance with the non-deterministic nature of these, we also allow a whole set of possible starting states. So remember, in a DFA, there's just one state you have to start at. In an NFA, because it's supposed to work in a somewhat unconstrained, non-deterministic way, you allow the possibility that there's a whole set of states, and you can jump in non-deterministically at any one of them. that all of these are possible starting states. Okay, so just to with that clarified. So I then mentioned going back to thinking about DFAs. I just ended last time by mentioning the problem of minimization. So the problem of minimization is roughly the following. So for any given regular language we might care to think of, there's any number of DFAs you can cook up, infinitely many in fact, that accept precisely that regular language. So for instance, here are two different DFAs that recognize exactly the same regular language. They'll accept exactly the same strings. So that raises a question: can we arrive at some standard choice of a best or preferably a smallest DFA for any given regular language? So given that there's all this choice, can we pick out one DFA as the best one for the given language we're interested in? And that's the minimization problem, because in fact the problem is precisely, because in fact the solution will be, yes, we can find a smallest DFA, a smallest choice of DFA for any given language, and that's what we're going to look at. So let's look at this, the second of those two DFAs that I gave here. And we notice that this is a bit redundant, because first of all there's this state Q4 here, which isn't doing anything useful at all, because there's actually no way to reach Q4 from the starting state. Okay, you can start here and you can sort of get around here a bit. There's no way to get into that state at all. So you might as well, that state's not contributing anything. And there's also a sense in which we've got more, even among the remaining states, we've got more states than we need here. Because if you think about what the language of this machine is, it's all strings that have an even number of zeros. So as we see each zero, we move around this circle here. And if we've seen an even number of them, we'll either be in Q0 or Q2. So there's got more, somehow there are superfluous states that we can't reach. And even among the states that there are, there's some redundancy. So informally, we can reduce this to a smaller DFA whilst keeping exactly the same language by doing two things. First of all, we simply throw away any states that can't be reached from the starting state. Okay, so in this case, Q4 can't be reached, so we throw it away. And then we kind of squish together any pair of states that's effectively doing the same job. So if you notice you've got two states such that it never matters which of those two states you're in, then you're allowed to identify them and squish them together into just one state. So what do I mean by two states that do the same job? Well, think of it like this. So imagine you're processing some string. Okay, so you start at the beginning and you're trundling through, doing some transitions, and you're sort of halfway through the string, okay, and then you lose concentration, right? And you forget whether, you're not quite sure whether it was state Q1 or Q3 that you were meant to be in, okay? So the question is, does it matter, right? Does it ever matter whether you should have been in Q1 or Q3? Is that a thing you need to remember, or is it just the same either way, okay? Now, think about the remaining part of the string that you haven't seen yet, okay? If it was the case that starting from Q1 and processing that remaining part of the string took you into an accepting state, whereas starting in Q3 and processing that same remaining part of the string took you into a rejecting state, okay, then it certainly would matter, or might matter, whether you're in Q1 or Q3, because there'd be some possible future string which from Q1 would lead you to accept the string, from Q3 it would lead you to reject. So you don't want to forget whether you're in Q1 or Q3, for that matter. On the other hand, supposing it's the case that whatever the remaining part of the string is, okay, whatever the bit of the string is that you haven't seen yet, either starting from both Q1 and Q3, that part of the string would take you to an accepting state, or starting from either of Q1 or Q3, it would take you to a rejecting state, okay? Supposing it was the case that there were no possible future part of the string, which in one case would take you to an accepting state, and the other case would take you to a rejecting state, okay? Then, It doesn't matter if you've got it wrong. It doesn't matter if you were actually in Q1 and you thought you were in Q3, because you'll end up accepting or rejecting exactly the same strings either way, okay? So that means we can regard two states as equivalent if the following condition holds, and here I've written it mathematically. So if for every possible string x, so every string in sigma star, and think of x as the string consisting of the symbols you haven't seen yet, okay? So if every possible possibility for the remaining portion of the string, okay? And remember this delta hat notation, this was the many-step transition relation. This was the, this means the state that you get to from Q by performing the symbols in X, okay? If X takes you from Q into some accepting state, that's the state in F, then, right. Okay, this is supposed to say blah, blah, blah is also in F, okay? In F at the end of that line. Okay. So the point is, whatever remaining sequence of symbols X you see, if X takes you from Q to an accepting state, precisely when X takes you from Q prime to an accepting state, then you might as well identify Q and Q prime. So in this case, for instance, Q1 and Q3, the two states I've been talking about, are equivalent because in both cases, a state will take you from them to an accepting state precisely when it contains an odd number of zeros. Okay, so we've got an odd number of zeros, 1, 0 or 3 zeros. Same from Q3, 1, 0 or 3 zeros, and so on, will take you to an accepting state. So we can squish Q1 and Q3 together. And we can also squish Q0 and Q2 together because in either case, from those states, your string will be accepted if the remaining characters contain an even number of zeros. So we get a new DFA by throwing away Q4, which is unreachable, squishing together Q1 and Q3 into a single state, and squishing together Q0 and Q2 into another single state. And if you think about that, that leaves you a DFA with just two states, and it's basically the same as this DFA, the smaller DFA we started with. Okay, so it turns out that this one on the left here is the minimization of the one on the right. Okay, it's what you get if you do these steps. So let's write min of m for the DFA you get by reducing the DFA m. So this operation has some very nice properties, which I won't strictly prove to you, but I'll tell you what they are, and most of them you can kind of intuitively see. So first of all, the language corresponding to the minimized DFA is exactly the same as the language corresponding to the original DFA, okay? So that's a requirement we definitely wanted to have, that we don't change the language when we do this minimizing. So we might have made the DFA smaller, but it's a DFA that recognizes exactly the same language, okay? And that certainly tells you already that if you've got two DFAs with the same minimization, and because each of those DFAs has the same language as its minimization, those DFAs will themselves have the same language. But what's clever is it works the other way around too. So it will always happen. If you take any two DFAs at all with the same language, out of all the millions of DFAs that define the same language, you can take any two of them, minimize both of them, and you'll get down to basically the same minimized DFA. Or at least you'll get down to what we call isomorphic DFAs. So what I mean by this symbol here is we regard two DFAs as basically the same or as isomorphic if they're the same apart from calling their states something different. So it doesn't matter if we call the states Q1, Q0, Q1, or odd or even, or Q5 or Q7 or something like that. Okay. So isomorphic means basically just the same if you allow relabeling or renaming of the states. So we think of isomorphic DSAs as morally the same. Okay. So we've got this very strong condition that two DFAs define the same regular language, precisely when they have the same minimization. So the minimization gives you a sort of absolutely standard choice of a preferred, if you like, of a preferred DFA for that language. And from those first two bullet points, it's quite easy to deduce a further fact that if you minimize a DFA, you get one, and then you try and perform that same minimization operation again, nothing will happen the second time. So if it's already minimized, then applying that procedure of minimization a second time won't change it. Okay. You can see, actually, if you think about it, that follows easily from those first two bullet points. And finally, the DFA we get from minimization is actually the smallest DFA in terms of the number of states that it's possible to have that recognizes the language in question. So that's nice. So in fact, we've got a nice way of not only sort of optimizing our DFAs, but of testing whether two DFAs define the same language or not. Okay, so we've got a best or standard choice of a DFA for a given regular language. And I won't go into many more formal details than this. For this course, we won't expect you to know proofs of these facts or anything, but there is a more mathematical treatment in Cozen's book, if you like. Okay. There's another point to make, which is it's even better than that, because this process of minimization of a DFA is not something that just sort of is a mathematically defined construction. It's something we can actually do automatically by means of a certain algorithm. So let's see. Let's talk about that for a minute. So let's first of all look at that definition I gave a couple of slides back of when it is that we can regard two states as equivalent. So I've written this squiggly equals sign there to mean states Q and Q prime can be regarded as equivalent. In other words, it's possible to squish together Q and Q prime. I should say it may be that you've got three states, they're all equivalent, and then you can squish them all together. Okay, it needn't be just pairs of states, although it was in the example. You can squish together lots of states. Anyway, this definition says these two states can be regarded as equivalent if for any possibility for the string of remaining symbols, there's that typo again. Okay, the state you'll get to from Q using that string X is accepting if and only if the state you get to from Q prime using that string X is accepting. Now you might worry about this, because although this gives you a sort of abstract mathematical definition of when it's allowed to collapse two states, you might think that's not terribly useful because it doesn't give you a way in practice of telling, because at least superficially, this seems to require that you check every possible sequence X of remaining states. Okay, so there are infinitely many possibilities for the sequence X here, because the string of remaining symbols might be as long as you like. Okay, so if you were to sort of directly try and check this condition, it would seem that involved you in looking at infinitely many possible strings, okay, which you can't do in practice. Okay, so you might worry that this abstract mathematical definition of minimization wasn't much good in practice, because you can't actually do it. You can't actually tell when it's allowed to collapse to states or not. Well, the good news is that if you think about it a bit more carefully, you can get around that problem, and that there is, in fact, an actual algorithm for minimizing a DFA, and it's an algorithm that works in reasonable time. So, for instance, if I give you a DFA, say, in terms of the transition table, as a sort of lookup table stored as an array or something like that, there's an actual algorithm you can run on that, something, a programmable thing you can run on that, which will convert that to a minimized DFA. Okay. So this is quite handy in practice, because it means if we're designing a state machine for some purpose, we can build it or specify it in, perhaps put it together out of various components, smaller components, in any way which is convenient to us, without worrying about how big it's getting. We can specify it in just the way which is clearest, without worrying if actually we've ended up constructing some really massive DFA. Because we always know that at the end of the day, we can run this algorithm and collapse it down to a much more kind of concise and compact DFA, which might be some the way we'd want to implement it in, if we want to implement it cheaply in hardware as part of a controller device or something. We want the smallest DFA we can get. So it's nice to know that we can actually, this collapsing to a smallest DFA is something we can actually do. So I just sort of give you a little bit of a feel for how the algorithm works. So this is enough that you be able to see how to do it. So the idea is two states can be collapsed unless there's some specific reason why they can't, okay? That's the idea to bear in mind. So the idea is we draw ourselves up a two-dimensional table of, so for all possible pairs of states, so let's say we've got some states Q0, Q1, Qt. I'll just do it with three states because I'm lazy. Okay, let's move this up a bit. So imagine this is a two-dimensional array, and each entry in this array is just a Boolean flag. It's either true or false. Okay, and let's suppose they're all originally set to false. And the idea is that we'll mark some pair as true, even when we discover a reason why the two states in question have to be different. Okay. So we look for reasons why states can't be collapsed, and then once we've run out of reasons why states can't be collapsed, we then say anything else can be collapsed. Okay. So for example, we might see that we might start by saying, well, Q0, let's say that Q2 is an accepting state and the others aren't, okay? Then that would mean certainly that Q0 can't be collapsed with Q2, right? So let's mark those. And Q1 can't be collapsed with Q2. May as well mark them in the other place as well, okay? So we start by marking as inequivalent all pairs consisting of an accepting state and a non-accepting state, okay? And then we look through pairs of, we look again for pairs of states that, If you had two states and the same and the same transitions, say the letter A, will take you to two states that you've already decided can't be equivalent, okay, then that's a strong reason why these states can't be equivalent either. Okay? So you go through looking for a pair of states, P and Q, such that for some input symbol U, the states that you get to are all already marked as different. And then you might, let's say we look through that and there are no such pairs. Let's say that Q0 and Q1, there's no way you can get from Q0 and Q1 by the same transition to some inequivalent pair of states. Then we don't need to mark anything. And then you keep doing that until you've kind of found all the reasons why things have to be different. And at the end of the day, if some pair is still unmarked, so Q0 and Q1 are still unmarked, that means you can collapse these. You might need to go over that again, or on the tutorial sheet there'll be kind of an example of that to try out. But that's in small examples, you don't actually need to apply this algorithm. In smaller examples, just from your understanding, just from kind of staring at it and your understanding of what the language in question is, you can normally you should be able to see whether two states can be collapsed or not. So here's a clicker question for you, right? So I'll give you a bit of time. For this. So here is a DFA over a two-element alphabet, A and B. So it's got four states as it stands. So perhaps just by staring at it, thinking about the condition for when states can be identified, or perhaps by thinking intuitively about how you would describe, that might be the way to do it, think intuitively about how you'd describe the language defined by this machine. So see if you can work out what the minimized version of this DFA should be. And then I want you to answer, like, once I've started the thing, which I haven't yet, I want the answer that you should click on should be the number of states in the minimized DFA. And it's obviously at least one, and it's at most four, because we've got four states there. So have a think about that, and then maybe you sort of put a hand in the air when you think you've got an answer. And then when a few people have got an answer, I'll start. But... Okay, I think you've got an answer. Okay, yeah. Just give you a bit longer.
Okay, and okay, so you've still got 30 seconds from when I click this. So, okay, two hit, right, okay. Oh, right, we're going. Very good.
Okay, so the. Okay, I didn't tell it what the correct answer was. That was just because I want to reuse it for a different question in the later in the lecture, which may or may not have the same correct answer. But the correct answer is indeed 2. So that's the majority. So well done if you got that. So it's you can get away with 2 states for this because you can see that Q0, Q1, and Q2. Can all be legitimately identified. Okay, you see, there's just the A transitions just take you between all those, and the B transitions take you from any of those to Q3. So if you right. Okay, so if you can collapse Q0, Q1, and Q2 to a single state, which I've called Q0, 1, 2, keep Q3 different, then the transitions on the minimized thing will look like that. So. Those of you who got the answer that there were 2 states, hopefully you got the answer because this is the machine, this is the minimized machine you came up with. Someone like to admit that they did get this machine and they weren't just guessing? Okay, so right, and a way to think about it as well is if you look at what the language accepted by this thing is, it's all strings that end with a B, okay? Because as soon as you have a B, you go to Q3, and if you have another B, you stay in Q3. But if you have an A, that takes you out of Q3, and A's will keep you out of Q3, and a B will take you back in. So you can just see that. Once you've spotted that. The language consists of all strings ending with a B, then it's pretty clear that all you need to keep track of is whether the last symbol you've seen is a B or not. Okay, so well done to those who got that. So that's minimization of DFAs, okay? This is still sort of the slides from the previous lecture. I'm just about to start. Today's lecture slides at the moment. So someone pointed out that I'd given references to the Kozin book, but not to the Jurafsky and Martin book. So seeing as Jurafsky and Martin also has stuff on this DFAs and NFAs, I've added the references for that there. Okay. So next time, which is right now, we're going to go on to the question, are NFAs really more powerful than DFAs or not? So, let's, excuse me, see if I can, right. Oh, I see what I did. I just forgot to change. I just forgot to update the title on the slide of this lecture. So that's a foolish thing. But anyway, the title of this lecture is supposed to be equivalence of DFAs and NFAs. Okay. So I'll say a bit about what the what it is we're trying to achieve here, and the idea that we're trying to convert an NFA to an equivalent DFA, and I'll do a worked example in some detail to show you how that's, give you the idea of how that's supposed to work. And then I'll give the mathematical details of how it's supposed to work in general. And then there'll be a related, another related clicker exercise. So see if we can have two clickers in one lecture. And then if there's time, I'll give you just a little example of a little thing you can do once you've proved this, once you've got this result. Okay. So what are we trying to do here? So we've said that a regular language, by definition, is a language that's precisely recognised by some DFA. So the language associated with a language is regular if there's some DFA that it's the language associated with. We've also seen that every deterministic finite automaton is a non-deterministic finite automaton, because if you allow 0, 1, or more transitions, that includes the special case where there's always just one transition. So NFAs are more general than DFAs, but not vice versa. So there are more NFAs in the world than DFAs. Okay. So you might wonder, seeing there are more NFAs around, you might wonder whether NFAs let you recognize more languages than DFAs do. So is there some language that can be recognized by an NFA, but not by any DFA? In other words, it's not regular, there's no DFA for it. Do NFAs give you sort of more power for recognizing languages? So in this lecture, we'll see that the answer is no, they don't. And in fact, we'll see that any NFA you're given can actually be converted into an equivalent DFA that has exactly the same associated language. So even though NFAs look as if they're somehow more general or more powerful, in fact, they don't give you any more flexibility for defining languages. Okay, and that means that you could equally well define a regular language to be a language that's exactly recognized by some NFA. DFAs or NFAs doesn't make too much difference. And this is actually quite useful because it means we can use NFAs as an alternative and sometimes more efficient means of specifying a language. Sometimes it's cuter or more concise to do it with an NFA than a DFA. And also, we can prove some interesting mathematical facts somewhat more easily with using NFAs than we can with DFAs. So let's see how this works. The idea is we're going to show how any NFA can be converted into a DFA that's sort of equivalent to it, in the sense that it explains the same language. So what's the idea? Well, supposing we're given an NFA like this. So this is a non-deterministic thing, because from here there's two A transitions you could perform. You could either stay there or go over there. Likewise, from here there are two A transitions, and there's no B transition from here, and so on. Okay, so this is an NFA. Now, supposing you were given a string to process, and supposing in practice you were just trying to work out whether this string was accepted by this NFA or not. Just think about how in practice you would do that. Well, remember that a string is accepted by an NFA if it might be accepted by the machine under some possible execution of the machine with those symbols. Okay, so it needn't be the case that every possible thing it can do with ABA leads you to an accepting state. But there has to be at least something that this machine can do to the string ABA that lands up in an accepting state. So whereas with DFAs, we were thinking of, you can think about running a DFA by having a pebble in your hand, which you just put on the state that you're in, and just moving it around from one state to another. Okay. So what you could do if you were trying to do it with trying to work with an NFA, imagine you have a whole big bag of pebbles, okay? And at each stage, you have not just one pebble on a state, but you keep a pebble on every state which you might possibly have reached, okay? Every state that you might have reached under some path through the machine that's allowed by the symbols that you've seen. So you keep track. You don't know, because it's non-deterministic, you don't know exactly what state the machine is going to be in, but you keep track of all the states it might possibly be in. So let's see how this would work with this machine and with the input string ABA. Okay. So at the beginning, we haven't read in any symbols yet, and we notice that this particular machine has only one start state. Okay. So we know at the beginning, when we've processed nothing, so we've processed nothing so far, we know that we must be in the only starting state for this NFA. Okay, so let's sort of mark that state as a possible state, and none of the others are a possible state. Okay, and now we see that the first symbol of the string is an A. Okay, and we can see that under an A, this machine might stay in Q0, or it might jump to Q1. Okay, so at the second stage. Okay, so after processing this A symbol, we now record the fact that we might be in either of these two states, Q0 or Q1. Okay, so we've got two of our pebbles placed on states. Okay, so these are we don't know which of these the machine is going to be in because it's free to choose, but we know that it might be in either of these two states. There's no possibility at this stage that it's in Q2. Okay. And now let's look at the next symbol that's coming up. The next symbol that's coming up is a B, okay? If we were in Q0, then doing a B would let us jump into Q1. Whereas if we were already in Q1, then doing a B would let us jump to Q2, okay? And there's nothing else that can happen. So after doing a B, okay, we'll then be in either state Q1 or Q2. So we mark these as the possible states, okay? And now, getting to the end, we see the next symbol's an A. Okay, if we were in Q1, we could do an A and get to Q2. If we're in Q2, we could do an A and stay in Q2. Okay, so there are actually two different ways we could end up in Q2 after this. Or if we were already in Q2, we could do an A and get to Q0. Okay, so after doing this A, you see, we'll be on either Q2 or Q0. And as I said, there's two ways in which we could have got to Q2, but we don't really need to keep track of that. All we need to keep track of is that there's some way we could have got to Q2. We don't care about how we could have got there. Okay. So now we've finished the string, and we notice that at the end of the string, we could be in either Q2 or Q0. Okay. And then we notice that Q0 is an accepting state, okay? So at least one of our accepting states is coloured. So that means there is a possibility of ending up in Q0, that means there is a possibility of ending up in an accepting state, okay? So at that point we can say, yes, this string ABA is in the language accepted by this machine, because there is some possible run which will end up in Q0, which is an accepting state. Okay, so we can say that this string is accepted. So that's what you do. That's what you'd probably naturally do in practice if I gave you an NFA and asked you to check whether or not a string was accepted by it. Okay. Now, here's the sort of aha moment. So, the aha moment is the process I've just described to you, right? Is in fact a completely deterministic process. So at each stage, we remember we sort of marked or we coloured in certain states. And if I give you any set of states that are coloured in, and then I give you the next letter of the input, there's only one right answer to the question, what are the states, what is the set of states that could be reached from one of those initially coloured states via the letter that I've given you, okay? So this process we stepped through, okay, we had this one marked and then these two marked and then these two marked. There wasn't any choice we had to make. There was a right answer at each stage to what the marked states could be, okay? So what we're actually doing is in effect carrying out some completely deterministic process to tell us whether or not the string is to be accepted or not, okay? And what's more, the process I've just described is actually a completely finite state process, because if you think about what a state of this procedure is, this procedure that I've informally described, well, a state of this procedure is given by sort of a way of placing your pebbles on some of the states but not others. So if we've got, supposing our original machine had n states, then there are only 2 to the n possibilities for which states can have pebbles on and which don't, okay? So, in other words, we can picture to ourselves a big DFA, okay, a big deterministic machine, with 2 to the n states, in other words, one state for every possible subset of the states of the original machine. So in other words, for every choice of states that we choose to have a pebble on, okay, we give ourselves a new state of a DFA. And then we kind of model what we've done as a completely deterministic process amongst these 2 to the n states. So for example, the NFA we've been talking about has 3 states. So here I've drawn a nice complicated DFA with 8 states, okay? And you'll see what the states are labeled with are sets of states out of Q0, 1, Q2. So here we've got the empty set, here we've got the singleton sets, and we've got sets with 2 states and sets with 3 states. And if you think of each of these states as corresponding to a way of colouring or a way of placing pebbles on states of the original one, okay? So the idea is that initially we had that Q0 was the only possible state we might be in because that was the initial state, the only initial state of the original NFA. So the entry point to this deterministic machine will be the state where we've got just Q0 as coloured. And then if we did the A transition, which was what we did before, we get to a state where it was Q0 and Q1 that are coloured. And then a B transition will take you to the state where Q1 and Q2 were coloured. And another A transition will take you to the state where Q0 and Q2 were coloured. Okay. So this is a deterministic machine because every sequence of A and Bs will just take you on a unique path through this machine, and that will tell you what the coloured sets of states will be at that point. Okay. And then you'll notice I've marked some states as accepting here, and remember that in the original NFA, Q0 was the only accepting state. Okay. So here, I've labelled a state as accepting if it contains the state Q0. So remember, all that we care about is whether there's some way of ending up in an accepting state. So if we end up in a configuration where the set of states we might be in contains an accepting state, we should regard that itself as an accepting state of this new DFA. So you see these 4 states here that have Q0 as a possibility, they're accepting states. Okay, so hopefully you can see that although it's bigger than the original NFA, this DFA will accept precisely the same strings as the original NFA. Yeah? Is that making...
Well, there's one state which has no reciprocal array, I guess.
Sorry?
The state, accepting state, Q0, Q2.
Q0, Q2.
There's no...
There's no A transition out of that. Well spotted. Hey. Okay. So we're right. Okay. So where should there's no A transition out of that. So let's see. Where should the A transition out of that? Okay. Good question. Someone else tell me where it should just go to itself, yeah? Thank you. Okay. Well spotted. Okay. So there should be an A transition from Q0 Q2 to itself. Correct that. Thank you very much. Okay. Any other questions about this? Okay. So any DFA can be any NFA can be converted to a DFA with the same language. Okay. So I've done it in an example, but then here's the mathematical definition of how you do it in general. So we're given an NFA with a set of states Q, a transition relation capital delta, a set of possible starting states, capital S, and a set of final states or accepting states, F. Okay? So then we want to build ourselves a DFA with these bits and pieces, and we do it like this. So the set of states of the DFA is set up called 2 to the Q, and this is the set of all possible subsets of the set of state Q. And it's sometimes written like this as the power set of Q. I don't know. Which of these are you more used to? Who's used to this? 2 to the Q. Yeah, is that familiar? And who's familiar with power set of Q? Okay, that's a bit more. You know what it is anyway. And if Q has n states, then this set will have, the set of all possible subsets of Q will have 2 to the n states. Okay, so that's what we do in general. We have a state for every possible set of states of the original machine. And then if A is a set of states of the original machine, or a state of the new machine, then and U is a symbol that we're reading in, then the new set of states we jump to is the set of all states of the original machine, such that there's some set of states in the starting state A that you can get to by U, using the original transition relation. Okay, so don't worry if you can't kind of process that straight away, but that, it says what you expected to say if you've understood the idea. Okay, and then so here's a quite interesting thing. There's just one initial state in the new DFA. Because states in the new DFA are sets of states of the NFA, the initial state of the DFA is the set of all possible initial states of the original NFA. Okay, so they are the sets we might be in before we've read any symbols. Okay, and the set of final states are the set of all states that contain at least one final state of the original DFA. So that's the sort of jargon version, once you've got the intuition from the example, hopefully you can make some sort of sense of that. And then it's not too hard to see, I won't bore you with the details, that the language defined by this DFA M is exactly the same as the language defined by the DFA N. Okay? So just to summarise where we've got to, we've shown that for any NFA we can construct a DFA with just the same associated language. So we could equally well define a regular language to be a language that's recognized by some NFA. They've got the same expressive power. But there's still virtue in having both DFAs and NFAs around because, as you've seen in the example, the DFA we got was quite a bit bigger than the NFA we started with. So it may well be that a language can be specified much more concisely by an NFA. You can use an NFA with a much smaller number of states than by a DFA. Okay? So we know that we can, by this subset construction, anytime we want to, we can automatically convert an NFA into a DFA if we want to get a deterministic machine. Okay? But when we do that, we risk the possibility there might be an exponential blow-up in the number of states. Okay? So if our NFA had 10 states, we risk the possibility we might get a DFA with 1,024 states. Of course, what happens a lot of the time is you can get a big DFA. In practice, you can get a big DFA when you apply this construction. But then if you apply the minimization construction I talked about earlier, that will straight away get it down again to something quite a bit smaller, perhaps intermediate in size between your original NFA and the full subset one. So in practice, a combination of this construction with the minimization can help to keep things under control quite a lot of the time. It's worth knowing there are bad cases, okay? So last time I put up this slide as an example of pictures, an example of an NFA, okay? So remember, for one, you can either go from Q, you can stay in Q0, or you can go to Q1. And I remark that this is an NFA that recognizes the set of those strings in which the fifth symbol from the end is a 1, because once you've done this 1, you can do 4 more symbols and end up in an accepting state. But you have to guess when you're at the fifth symbol at the end to make that one. Okay. So this is a sort of a bad case where the exponential blow-up in the number of states really does hit you. Because you can apply the subset construction to this and get a DFA that does the same job, but it'll have a lot of states. And it's not too hard to see that any DFA for recognizing this language will essentially have to have at least 32 states, which is kind of almost 64 states, which is sort of the maximum. And that's because, if you think about it, any DFA will in effect have to remember the last 5 symbols that it's seen. Okay, so if you remember the last 5 symbols that you've seen, you just keep a little window of 5 symbols, then you can always tell whether you're in a state where the fifth to last symbol you've seen was a 1. So it's quite easy to convince yourself that we need a big number of states to recognize this language. So there are bad cases where we really do, in practice, get this exponential blow up. But not always. A lot of the time we won't. Okay. I do have another clicker question for you, but there's not time, so I'll. Okay, so I have to kind of trust you not to look up the answer on the slides, which are on the web, right? Okay. I mean, you can do that if you want, but you don't get any educational benefit from it. Yeah. Okay. So the exercise is, here's an NFA. What's the kind of smallest DFA that would do the same job? Okay. Are you sure? Right. Okay. I'll try and I'll log. I'll promise to log myself out in a civilized way. Thanks very much. Hi. Oh, the podcasts aren't. No, I think the management page. The podcasts aren't up yet. They will be very soon. Yeah. I can't promise about the quality of them.
For accepting states, does it matter which one you end up in, or they're all just equivalent?
You just say if you're in any of them, then you accept.
Is that strict for language processing, or is that for general for DFAs?
Let's say that's for DFAs. I mean, at the moment we're just concentrating on the simple problem of is a string in the language or not.
Okay.
Later on, when we want to do slightly more useful things with strings,
so
we might want to.
The general idea of finite constant doesn't matter which state you end up in.
Yeah, for the time being, yeah.
For now, and it doesn't matter what which is actually.
Thank you. Thank you.